This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
One, two, three.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. There are songs that just work for basically everyone, that give you some particular feeling, vibrant and specific. Pursuant to this, I submit to you the Oogum Boogum song.
Oogum, oogum, boogum, 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 now baby, you're casting your spell on.
Silly title, obviously. Silly lyrics also. But there's something about the feeling. That almost playful falsetto. The drums bouncing along. The jangly guitar.
When you wear your high-hole boots with your hip hugger suit, it's all right. You're out of sight. And you wear that cute mini skirt with your brother's sloppy shirt.
It's genuinely hard to be in a bad mood after you hear the Oogum Boogum song. In fact, it's probably not worth the effort. Better to just kick your feet up, have a nice tea, and breathe easy for a minute. The song was released in 1967. Its singer, my guest, Brenton Wood. Brenton wrote it, too. He's also responsible for the hit songs Gimme Little Sign and Me and You. We'll hear those later on. Now, Wood, as I said, had some hits. That song, the Oogum Boogum song, went to number 34. You've probably heard it sometime in a movie or a grocery store or something. But more than that, he had a sound. That sweetness and lightness, the bounce, the cool. That sound helped define what these days are called lowrider oldies. In the big wide world, he's a guy who had a few minor hits. In the world of East Side Story compilations and dropped Chevy Fleet lines, Brenton Wood is basically Bruce Springsteen. I saw Wood in concert a few months ago, and it wasn't at a jazz club or some performing arts center on a college campus. He was headlining an arena, literally thousands of fans, every age, almost all Chicano, there to see an intergenerational touchstone. The man is in his 80s now, and he absolutely still got it. If you can, you should go see him live. He's currently wrapping up his farewell tour. The tour is named after another one of his hits, Catch You on the Rebound. I'm so excited to talk with Brenton Wood, who is a true legend. Let's get into our conversation.
I think you got your fools mixed up. You must think I'm somebody else. I'm not the same fool you knew that couldn't help himself and followed you around like a dog.
Brenton Wood, welcome to Bullseye. I'm so happy to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
You sound like $1 million. You were giving us your best Barry White before you came on the air.
That's because I just woke up. I woke up not too long ago.
My mom used to call and say, "It's the muffled tones of Barry White."
He had a great sound, but I mean, everybody don't sound like that. That's how he became a lover's choice with that music.
Well, Brenton, you have always sung sweetly. Was Sam Cooke your guy?
Sam Cooke gave me a lot of pointers in what I was doing, interested in. Found out that the diction of enunciation on songs, of understanding what the word was, what the artist said, kind of gave me a good insight on trying to make myself clear and understood.
I know what you mean. When you say that, your singing style is very carefully enunciated, mm-hmm. and it kind of gives you the, it feeds into the kind of lightness of your singing, the, you know, the feeling that you could almost float away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they've been floating. I was kind of fortunate with that. But, you know, I had to teach myself all everything that I needed to know, except for how to get the money.
Did you sing in the neighborhood when you were a kid or in your family?
Every day I walk down the street. Every day I'm singing. Every at work I'm singing. I did it in the neighborhood, but I never been on the stage before I got to a hit record.
You were one of 11 kids, right?
Yes, 13, but too bad. Damn.
How did you all sleep in the house?
Well, it was kind of rough because we had only a two-bedroom house. And with 11 of us in there, you know, plus a friend that liked to stay over there, too.
So where did everybody go?
Well, they doubled up on beds, you know, the ladies in the room and the ladies' room and the guys in the guys' room. and one bathroom.
Where were you in the order of the kids?
I'm number 7.
Did your siblings sing?
Not that I knew. My family actually didn't know I was singing. I was really actually going through the changes of studying. I got my academics in Hollywood, you know, reading the trade papers and following the music scenes and following music progress.
How old are we talking about that you're reading trades?
Oh, 15, 16.
You know, I talked to Smokey Robinson the other day mm-hmm. for the show, mm-hmm. and he told me the same thing. He was talking about being 13, 14, 15 years old and buying Hit Parade so that he could look at the songwriting credits on the hit songs.
Right.
So that is not a typical thing for a 14-year-old to be up to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not. But, you know, we were so poor. And like I was saying, there were 11 people, that I was really a hustler at a young age. Young age. I was really, I'd say about 12 years old, I was into school until I heard piano on the stage in the recreational center. And they had a stage and a basketball court. And this person was on the stage singing, playing the piano, and I wondered what the heck that was. Yeah, at that age, it's like, oh, what is a piano? But we didn't have that type of piano. We didn't have a piano in our house at all. It was in another room.
So how did you learn?
I practiced, and I watched him play, and when he finished, I got up and I tried the same thing he did, but my hands weren't big enough. So I had to do a two-finger harmony from, you know, C, D.
Was there someone to teach you or somewhere to learn in the neighborhood?
You know, there were places to learn, but, you know, I was just learning by that and the radio station. I wanted to do what they were doing on the radio. I had a good insight. I wanted to be rich. I wanted to be somebody that was making some money, because Pop didn't make too much money back then with 11 kids and $45 a week. Some days he had to bring on jackrabbits.
You mean to eat?
Well, but of course. I was just like the birds.
Was there always all the food you needed?
No.
What would happen when there wasn't enough to eat?
Well, that's where my friend's caught heck with me because I would eat over to their house because I knew it wasn't going to be anything there when I got home. So I would eat over there and I'd use their telephone and their piano. And I write, you know, I just write. And her son used to, we used to sing together. We did a song together by a neighborhood producer. And so that was it. But I didn't think anything would come out of it until I see the uprising of that stuff that I did in the early years. Up and changed over and, you know, and made my today's, made it sound today's. And then they released it.
What were you singing when you were a kid? Was it doo-wop going on?
You know, when I was a kid, I used to watch a lot of cowboy movies. I used to watch Gene Autry, Hoppin' on Cassidy. All the singing cowboys, it used to make me feel different.
If it wasn't for the rain, I might have found somebody new. And I'd be crying over you if it wasn't for the rain. We're together once again, and now we'll never ever part. I might have had a broken heart if it wasn't for the rain.
So I, you know, had to get into that really heavy with those soap operas. They were like to be continued tomorrow or next week. Did so-and-so get out of that situation that he was in? Tune in next week. you know, and that stuff like that. They used to give me nightmares because I was always going up the cliff with them.
So are you telling me that you were sitting around singing Happy Trails?
Yes. Happy Trails and everything pertaining to. I was more country, more so to speak.
So how close did you become? How close did you come to becoming a singing cowboy? That's what I need to know.
Well, you know, first I had to make some money. Because I could have been famous, because I used to love Eddie Dean and those cowboys and stuff like that. And they really sent me on an adventure. And I had that was my favorite pastime, was watching those soap operas, or what they call them?
Serials?
Serials. I was into serials really heavy.
Did you have radio or records at your house?
We had radio records. You know, no more dogging. All that's about the early stuff in the 50s.
What do you remember listening to?
Lloyd Price, Big Mama Thornton, Etta James in the 50s, 60s. And a lot of Sam Cooke, a lot of Nat King Cole, Jesse Belvin. My style is actually out of Jesse Belvin's music, because he had such a romantic thing going about him in his songs. Nat King Cole was really a good enunciator in his enunciation and the way he handled a song. I just worked and worked and worked and played until I got to the point to where I thought I was good enough to make a record. And then I said, what in the hell am I going to think of? What am I going to sing about? I got a girlfriend. That's where it came from. I got a girlfriend. She gave me everything I needed to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Don't know why, but I love you, I do. Cause I like the way you love me, oh girl. Every time you kiss me, thrills me from my head to feet. And I tell myself that deep down
there will be no one else for me. 'Cause I like the way you love me, love me, love me.
More still to come with Brenton Wood after a break. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History, from Onyx Collective and Hulu. Directed by Prentice Penny, executive producer of Insecure, Black Twitter, A People's History, tells the story of how black voices found a new home online and blossomed into a force for change while laying down some hilarious tweets along the way. From the memes to the movements, see how this powerful community shapes culture, society, and politics. Black Twitter, A People's History, is now streaming on Hulu.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Last year, over 20,000 people joined the Body Electric study to change their sedentary, screen-filled lives. And guess what?
We saw amazing effects.
Now you can try NPR's Body Electric Challenge yourself. Listen to updated and new episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
The Greatest Generation, Maximum Fun's irreverent, filthy-mouthed Star Trek podcast, is a big deal.
How big? It's the only Star Trek podcast big enough to have a live show tour, and we are inviting all Star Trek fans and Max Funsters everywhere.
We're calling it the Share Your Embarrassment Tour, and we're going to celebrate and roast Star Trek V.
That's the one where they kill God. We're going to be in a bunch of cities, and GreatestGenTour.com has all the info and ticket links.
That's GreatestGenTour.com for dates and ticketing info for the Share Your Embarrassment Tour.
Come share your embarrassment with us.
And grow stronger from the sharing.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. If you're just joining us, my guest is Brenton Wood. He's the singer and songwriter behind the hits Baby You Got It, Gimme a Little Sign, and the Oogum Boogum song. He's also an all-time favorite for fans of lowrider oldies. At 82 years old, he is in the midst of his farewell tour. It's called the Catch You on the Rebound Tour. Let's get back into our conversation. What was the first time you got to go into a studio?
1957.
So you were young. Who were you singing with?
Donald Moore. He had a piano at his house, and his mother cooked. And I ate before I left her house, because there wasn't going to be anything left when I got home, because we all of us, everybody's saying, we didn't know.
How did the two of you end up in a studio?
Actually, the neighborhood producer. They used to call, his name was Mush Mouth Robinson.
That's a great name.
Who you telling? You can go today, Mush Mouth. That's crazy.
And he had recorded like in the 40s.
He was out of the 40s. He lived in our neighborhood, you know, and he recorded us. Because we used to ride around in our little doom buggy with a 46 Chevy, because I got 46 now. 46 Chevy, singing, and just the walking in the rain. You know, songs like that.
I have a track here by Little Freddie and the Rockets.
That's the one. There was no such thing as the Rockets. That's what I'm talking about. They built that madness up. You know, but that's what they say, Little Freddie and the Rockets. It's Little Freddie and Don.
And you were Little Freddie?
Yes, and Don Moore was Don Moore.
Well, let's listen to All My Love.
All my love.
See, that background, something.
What about it?
I started learning to harmonize with myself. And then after I got into that particular part about it, I don't need you guys to rehearse with me. I mean, you guys don't have time. I got time. So I just follow through my own dream.
What does it mean to harmonize? How do you learn to harmonize with yourself?
Sing alone, and then sing along against it with another tape recorder.
So you were just bouncing back and forth between tape recorders? I love that.
So I was learning all the time.
Have a lot of love. Gotta have a whole lot of love from a you little girl. Gotta have a whole lot of love from a you little girl right now. Tonight I was thinking of how we used to be, hoping and praying
you went to college out of high school, right?
I went to junior college. Compton Junior College.
What did you think you were going to get out of it? What was the plan?
Well, I didn't get out of junior college. I didn't go to junior college because I wanted to. I had to go there because they wouldn't let me walk across the stage to get my diploma because I couldn't afford my year-end pictures.
You talking about it in high school?
Yeah. So I had to do a continuation school, and I did it at Compton College.
Did you expect that if music didn't work, you'd go into the? I mean, you grew up in South LA and South Bay. There's a lot of like manufacturing stuff going on there. Did you expect that you were going to go into the trades if you couldn't make it as a singer?
You know, I had a great job history. Working in the everyday marketplace, you know, and I first started off as a construction helper, digging swimming pools. And I moved from there to dishwashing. And I went to Harvey Aluminum, which is now Martin Marietta. And I was overhead crane operator, you know, and stacking stuff for Vietnam bullets, shells, and all that, bomb shells and all that stuff, after we run them through the extrusion machine. And I was actually getting ready to quit because I was making pretty good bucks back then on that particular job until I said, I'm going to quit singing, and I'm going to just stay on my job, and this is a great job because I get bonus checks plus. So I was going to relax. I was going to kick back and quit singing.
I mean, you were, by then, if we're talking about 1964, 1965, you were into your 20s.
Yeah, I was into my 20s. But, you know, from 1957... which is the song on a label called So Bad, Ooh, So Bad. It's about my first girlfriend. You know, and how fickle ladies are when they're that young and stuff like that. I wrote a song called Betty Joe. I've been waiting for you to make up your mind. Do you want my love or are you going to leave me or crazy, something like that. And that's where I got that song called Betty Joe. And the flip side was a slow song called So Bad.
Mm-hmm. someone's hands. Lead me through the night. I need someone's arms to hold and squeeze me tight. When the night begins, oh Lord, again and again. Honey, I need your love so bad.
I had recorded 4 songs every year from that point to 1965, 66. I've been on Scepter label. I've been on Screen Gems. I've been on oh boy, a lot of labels. I got kind of upset because all I got out of it was a hamburger and lunch.
Did you get to the point where you thought it just wasn't going to happen for you?
Yeah. I just said that, you know. I got to. I have so many jobs. When I got to the point that I was making a good $500 a week.
Were you single?
Yeah, I was single, but it didn't. I wasn't single because I was really a neighborhood flirt. Basically, you know, because when I write the songs over at Don's house, when I would write songs, I'd call up ladies and ask them, "What do you think about this? What do you think about this?" You know, and that kind of gave me some direction. You know, and then I got into the what makes a hit record? A hit record, how does it expand? It starts in the neighborhood and reaches from neighborhood to neighborhood or city to city or, you know, state to state. But the disc jockeys pick it up because they want, you know, recognition of a band playing hit records. I took time out to say, well, I'm going to do it one more shot. I'm going to give it one more shot. Then the fashion chain came. Bell-bottom, hot pants, mini skirts, all that stuff came about. Then I wrote the song around that. You know, what's happening right now. The mini skirts, when you wear them high hole boots, the hole boots, you know, all that stuff. I just wrote, you know, I scribbled a lot of rhyming, you know, lyrics, and they're making sense out of what I'm talking about. Then I got to a certain part, I started laughing. So I was laughing because the Oogum Boogum song was a funny song. But I just changed the word, that Oogum Boogum thing to Abracazaba. To Oogum Boogum, which was the same thing. It's a hocus pocus, you know, I'm catching you spell on whatever and stuff like that. Then I built it. And then I got the hit. I got the record. I went into the studio over at Nashville West on next to Paramount Studios on Melrose. Was it Melrose or Santa Monica? Melrose, Santa Monica. And I went in with another group. Another band, because they were a band, they would play their song. The record company was recorded, I think, a couple songs with them. Then I asked them to back me up, you know, on my song that I had, one song. And I just sat at the piano and expressed myself. They followed me. And it's like, you know, down, 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 down. And that kind of made it's kind of exciting that way when you build it up like a train's getting ready to go off on tracks or whatever.
That production choice was a function of the fact that those guys had just, you know, you had just been like, hey, can you guys stick around? I got a song I need to. And so they're like literally just joining in.
More or less.
Well, let's hear the Oogum Boogum song, your first hit record from 1967.
And they got me in the bottom. You can hear my piano playing in the bottom. Because when I start playing this, I'm almost like I'm nervous. And I just go, and I just keep that in mind where I'm at. So I just got to stay here. when I get to this part, I'm going to raise my hand and just repeat the front, and we're going out.
Let's hear it.
One, two, one, two, three.
Baby, you're casting a spell on me. I say, boogum, 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 boogum. Now, baby, you're casting a spell on me. You got me doing funny things like a clown. Just look at me. When you wear your high heel boots with your hip plug suit, it's all right. Sight. And you wear that cute mini skirt with your brother's sloppy shirt. I admit it, girl, that I can dig it. And the op says, boogum, 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 boogum. Now, baby, you're casting your spell on me. I say, boogum, boogum,
it just made me laugh.
I mean, it's a funny song because, you know, it's such a gorgeous song. It's also headed two different directions between the, as you said, like you had rewritten it to be about what was going on with, you know, young people's fashion at the time, right?
Well, that was the change of time. Everybody was a love child.
Things had changed so much. I mean, like we hear those songs that you recorded as a teenager,
mm-hmm.
and this song are miles and miles apart. And, you know, you were an adult man by the time you had a hit record. Like, you weren't a 19-year-old who didn't know what was going on around
you. Nope, I was 24.
You kind of had perspective on the world and the music changing. You know what I mean?
I followed Record World, Cashbox, and Billboard intensely. I had to find out what made a record hit a hit, how it spread it around to the next station, to the next city, to across the world, whatever. I had to study that, you know, in order to know what I was doing. Because I came to a point to where, you know, when I got to, you know, a great idea, I was very enthusiastic about the stuff that I was doing. And I wanted to be, you know, a star. Thinking I'll be rich, hoping I'll be rich one day. And you know, I've been handled like stepchild from that point on. You know, but you know, it's like, you know, the experience, I wouldn't trade it for nothing.
Well, I want to play another one of those records that you cut around that time in around 1967. This one's called Baby, You Got It.
Mama didn't raise no fools, and I should know that, baby, you got it. That's all I can say for you.
You got soul, too much soul, foxy clothes, the cutest nose, a groovy set, there's nothing fake about you. Baby, you got it. People can be cool.
By the time you were cutting these records, you know, there were like big heavy soul records on the radio. There were the kind of, you know, screaming, pleading kind of soul records on the radio. And your music has such a kind of light, gentle touch to it. Did you ever want to go up on stage and just, you know, scream your heart out?
Yeah, I do that all the time. You know, I used to do that when I was younger. I used to get on the stage and try to say Land of a Thousand Dances. You know, and I opened up with Atlanta Thousand Dances but I was very discouraged in certain stages of my career.
I want to play another great Brenton Wood record. My guess is Brenton Wood. This might be my favorite of all the singles that you cut in the mid late 60s. This one's called I'm the One Who Knows.
Ha!
a boy falls in love, he thinks of one girl. He wants to try to get a little thing going. Strange expressions on his face is showing. He gets an old rag and he shines his shoes and patches the holes in his favorite suit. I'm the one who knows. I'm the one who really knows.
I went to see you and I bought tickets. It was you and Barbara Mason. I bought tickets to this show because there was a poster on the street by my house. I said, Brent Wood, that's the man that sings Give Me a Little Sign in the Oogum Boogum song. That sounds like a good night out. I bought these tickets, and the whole time I'm waiting to go to this show, you know, I bought the tickets a month ahead of time. I'm thinking, what is this show going to be when I get there? Right? Who is this show for? You know, I'm like, not who is it for, as in it couldn't be possibly for anyone, but I'm like, is this going to be 30-year-old, you know, record store hipsters? Mm-hmm. Is this going to be, you know, elderly black folks in church clothes? Who is this? And I got to Long Beach where the show was, and I'm walking up to the venue. I don't even know, is this going to be a show with 200 people at it or 2,000 people at it? I'm walking up to the venue, and the line of lowriders and bombas is down the street, like one after another, after another, after another, especially bombas. And it's like families.
Yeah.
It's grandpa. It's multiple generations, not just two,
right?
Three and four generations there together. Mm-hmm. So you are obviously you're from that part of the country, right? You're from Southern California, at least grew up in Southern California.
I grew up in San Pedro, and I grew up in Los Angeles. Inner Los Angeles.
Was your audience always that Latino, and especially Chicano?
Chicanos. See, I'm from the neighborhood, and they call them cholos. And these people have car shows, and they do bring back memories of old cars and stuff like that. You know, and it was like they had their favorite artists, myself and Mary Wells. And Smokey was in there, too. But, you know, I lived in the neighborhood, and they followed me, that supported me, long after the records came off the charts. And because I didn't get, you know, what I expected from the record companies, I started asking bars and clubs to let me take the door. And you take the bar. My first 2 days there, I made $5 when I did a concert. The next time I came there, I made $15. But that next following week, I had a line around the corner. So that's where I was raised, too, in that neighborhood. And it stemmed from there. And they're very loyal. They keep me supported. And then, you know, I can just be grateful and thankful that the radio station that told me they would play my music, but I had to make them play it. I wonder what he meant about that. Then I found out. That's where it is. I have to top the black charts before I go over to the white charts.
We'll finish up with Brenton Wood in just a minute. Catch you on the rebound. It's Bullseye for MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from NPR sponsor Allianz Travel Insurance. Medical emergencies, travel delays, canceled flights. Anything can happen when you travel. That's why more than 70 million American travelers choose Allianz Travel Insurance to help them with headaches along the way. Get a quote and learn more at AllianzTravelInsurance.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor, MassMutual. According to Calendar.com, the average person schedules just 4.5 hours per year on finances. MassMutual gets it. Life is busy. If you can't find time to plan your financial future, find someone who can, like a MassMutual financial professional. For the last 170 years, they've helped people plan for retirement, college tuition, and any other short or long-term financial goals. Learn more at MassMutual.com.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the Wallace Foundation, working to develop and share practices that can improve learning and enrichment for young people and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas and information at wallacefoundation.org.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
If you do want me, give me a discussion. But if you don't want me, don't leave me on down. But if you need me, show me that you love. And when I'm feeling blue and I want to, there's just one thing that you should do. Just give me some kind of sign, girl. Oh, my baby, to show me that you're mine, girl. Oh, yeah. Just give me some kind of sign, girl. Oh, my darling, to show me that you're mine, girl.
I'm Jesse Thorne. You're listening to Bullseye. My guest is soul singer and lowrider oldies legend, Brenton Wood.
When you were introduced in this show that I went to see, the man who was emceeing the event came out. It was you and Barbara Mason. He came out and he said, your grandparents love this music. Mm-hmm. Your parents love this music. And if you're doing it right, you're teaching your children to love this music. And what I had thought maybe was going to be a 300, 400 person show, like a nice little theater show, there's thousands, I don't know, 3,000-4,000 people. And people were in tears.
You know, we get back to the part where love making in the hood is where it all begins. These love affairs. And then they go, you know, everybody's wanted, they want to do different, but they don't do it. They want to do, but they have to hang out and all that stuff like that. I had to deal with when I was creating songs and dealing with certain elements and stuff like that, I had to put stuff that was going on with them, what they were doing, what they were fussing and fighting and all that stuff like that. And I had to put all that stuff into a song or real life. So I just broke it down to giving back what's going on in the neighborhood back to the audience. And they dish it out and not taking right about it. And then I just blow it out of proportion, make a big deal. And then they found out that I had to do a third record, a fourth record, Me and You. The identical thing with what was going on in the neighborhood, you know? It's like, we've been together a long time. And you know what? We can get a little lightweight thing going. Which was, I add swing talk within the community into it. If you try and I try, Oh, man, like those people that sit down and cry all through those stuff, through the song, because of memories.
You know, we've been together a long time. And you know what? We can get a little old lightweight thing going if we really put our hearts to it. If you try and I try, girl, there's no telling how far we can go. Remember those loving fools, Romeo and Juliet? They thought they had a thing going, but they just didn't know. They couldn't visualize. They had no idea how it could really be, but we know, don't we, darling?
Memories are, you know, how they were with their boyfriend and girlfriend during that time. And they connected just like those cars that they built. And I mean, they really made Chevrolet.
Yes, Lord. We know, don't we, darling? We won't be wasting our time fussing and fighting like other people. Gonna be too busy being in love. Because this is the real thing. We found a groove. We move each other. We turn each other on. And this could last forever. All we need to do is give some kind of sign. Yes, love. And from then on, baby, it's easy. Let's talk about me and you.
Why do you think that when the hit records dried up, you decided not to quit? There's plenty of folks who had some hit records and they said, well, that time in my life has passed. I'm off to other things. And what you said you did was build something for the long term there.
Well, I mean, I left my job at Harvey Aluminum, you know, to be a singer. So, I mean, I wanted it to last. But, you know, like I said earlier, I love what I was doing, writing songs and, you know, playing piano and stuff like that. I used to love it. I used to spend all my time, a lot of time, just there doing that and creating songs and stuff like that and calling the girls up and ask them, what did they think? Was I on the right track? Was I on the right track or whatever? You know? And they just, I said, oh. And then I had a friend that was a star. His name was Don Julian. Don Julian had The Lark, and he had Always and Always, which was one of my favorite songs back in the day. Then I went to one of his concerts one time, one at the park in Compton. And I saw how the people reacted behind the songs. The ladies reacted behind the songs. And I said, I want to do that. That got me into it. And then when I didn't call them on the phone. They heard it on the radio, and you talk and talk, talk. It goes on and on.
I mean, what I could see watching your show was that there are a lot of people with hit records.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are plenty of folks who had some 45s on the charts, plenty of folks with great songs.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not many performers who have that feeling of community, who have that feeling of intergenerational connection that I felt in that room.
Mm-hmm.
That night.
Mm-hmm.
It must be incredible to feel on the stage.
It's a great feeling on the stage because sometimes I don't even have to sing. They sing them for me. You know, and they give me all the, you know, inspiration to want to do, but I don't want to overdo it. So I do that so much until I think they had enough and I'm going to get off the stage while I'm winning. But, you know, their kids come and they grow up and they want to come and stuff like that. And they want to come and their kids want to come. And it just grows and grows and grows.
Well, Brenton Wood, I sure am grateful for the time you took to talk to me. And grateful for your music and grateful I got to see you perform. I'll be out there next time.
Come on down.
Later, baby. Catch you on the rebound. A rebound. You didn't even write me.
Brenton Wood, I guess what I'm saying is I'll catch you on the rebound.
Later, babe.
Later, baby. Get you on the rebound.
Brenton Wood. He's on his final tour, the Catch You on the Rebound tour, which will be hitting, among other places, the Greek Theater in Los Angeles on October 7th, where he'll be performing alongside the Shy Lights, Barbara Mason, and Los Yesterdays, among others. Do yourself a favor. Get out to one of these shows. It's a special experience. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California, where we had an earthquake in the middle of a hurricane the other day. Los Angeles left relatively unscathed, so thankful for that. But boy, that was really something. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellow at Maximum Fun is Brianna Paz. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Our interstitial music is by DJW, also known as Dan Wally. Dan went to that Brenton Wood concert with me. We had a good old time. That was great. That was great fun. By the way, Dan and I did 45 mixes. I'm mentioning it because Brenton Wood was in mine. That we posted the other day on Mixcloud. So search for Jesse Thorne on Mixcloud and you'll find Dan Wally and my, 90-minute soul party mixes. Our theme song is called Huddle Formation. It was written and recorded by the Go Team. Thanks to them and Memphis Industries, their label, for providing it to us. Bullseye is also on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. You can follow us in all those places. If you enjoyed something that you heard on today's show, please share it with somebody, because that is how people hear about our show. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
Catch you on the rebound.
This message comes from Schwab. With Schwab investing themes, it's easy to invest in ideas you believe in, like online music and videos, artificial intelligence, electric vehicles, and more. Schwab's research uncovers emerging trends, then their technology curates relevant stocks into over 40 themes to choose from. Schwab investing themes is not intended to be investment advice or a recommendation of any stock or investment strategy. Visit schwab.com/thematic investing. Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
All that sitting and swiping, your body is adapting to your technology. Learn how and what you can do about it.
I really felt like the cloud in my brain kind of dissipated. Once I started realizing what a difference these little breaks were making, there's no turning back for me.
Take NPR's Body Electric Challenge. Listen to the series wherever you get your podcasts.